Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast with myself, Jasmine Harrison, and I'm joined by Phil Brining and Joe Kirk. Hello.
Hello.
Hello again. We're back again.
We're back again.
They come round so fast.
I know.
This week's session is on AI. So I think we flirted around with a couple of ideas of what we'll cover, and we ended up covering way more than that. So it's AI in the workplace meets importing personal data into generative AI meets Copilot meets EU AI Act.
Meets and us losing our
what's
job,
the meaning of
2001.
Life.
Yeah.
So
we had a lot of positive comments at the end of it, which is always quite a good measure. Sometimes they finish and you get a few thanks, but there were a lot of that was fantastic, you know, very thought provoking. So, you know, I know that we talked a bit around, you know, we talked a bit about AI, quite a lot about AI, and then around it, like the whole kind of societal aspects of it.
Yeah.
Which just quite, I think it's quite interesting. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good session.
Yeah, it was the chat was absolutely crazy. It was so hard to keep up. I think there were times where one of us would be quite quiet for about 5 minutes because we're just trying to go back to what people had said. But there was some great, great input from the listeners, which was always going to happen, really. I mean, this is such a hot topic, isn't it? And we're probably going to have to do some more in the future because it's not going anywhere and there's still so much to talk about. I think, you know, we were planning on talking about specifically how, you know, AI might affect workplace practices and, you know, how to monitor people's use of AI on their own, you know, in their own ways, in their own time, but also from an organizational perspective. And it went even broader than that. So it was really insightful.
I got off on the wrong foot saying I was drinking curried tea.
I don't think that bit's in the recording.
Oh, right. It was in the chat, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, true.
But I think that my favourite bit, I'm not sure, because I think I have a favourite bit, because I think for me, I know it was a bit disjointed, but it had a real flow to it. You know, it covered a lot of ground and it just seemed to morph from one topic to another. I think it was a good session, but we'll let people make their own minds up, eh?
Yeah. Well, you know, go ahead. Let us know what you think. As well, if you've got any suggestions on what future topics you would like us to talk about, then please let us know at info@dataprotectionpeople.com. We're always open to suggestions, and you know, there's been a lot on AI, so we finally listened. So we'll listen eventually, but yeah, in the meantime, and we hope you enjoy the session. Scene.
Not gonna ask me how I found the session, though.
Well, you did.
I couldn't fucking get a word in the two of you two.
Yeah. No, you're yawning all that.
No, but you normally always say, Joe. I'm not even gonna bite to that. But you normally always say, Joe, how did you find the session? But
well,
you know,
go on,
fine.
Joe. How did you?
No, it's too late now.
No, you can cut it.
No, too late.
Mal can edit it in.
Yeah, Mal's just had this bit in.
No, I'm not bothered. I don't want to tell you.
Oh, he's sulking.
What was your favourite bit, Joe?
I didn't really have one. I was gonna just make the point that, you know, we're not here to say that we're AI experts, and that the point of this was to not scaremonger AI, you know, but we just really wanted to kind of raise the concerns about, you know, using AI for the purposes of what we do in our day-to-day job anyway, you know, providing advice on the law. It has a danger of precedent, because if you get wrong advice from ChatGPT, for example, and you implement that internally, you know, it could have some serious adverse effects on, you know, your data subjects. And that's not really the point of what the GDPR is about, is it? So, you know, the aim wasn't to scaremonger and say, don't use AI, just to, you know, be cautious if you do.
I don't think that's the message that came across.
I
think we were advocating using AI for certain things, like, you know, we'd use it for doing, you know, your performance review, use it for doing ROPAs, use it for doing policy and procedure drafting, you know, use it. Yes, good.
I do agree that it wasn't the point that I didn't think we put that point across either, but, you know, there was a comment or two that did say that we feel like we might be scaremongering a little bit. And I just wanted to put the point across that that's not the aim of what the session was about. It's just to, you know, raise the
thought. The whole point of the session is to prompt thought and, you know, make people, you know, help people to consider things and realize that they're not on their own. You know, there's other people having the same concerns about a policy for this and, you know, AI use in the business and, you know, being seen as the blockers. Kind of it's not an education thing, it's about, it's a community, isn't it? We're trying to build the or support the community.
Agree. Anyway,
enough. He's been out all week. He's been.
I have.
Yeah. Busy.
Sorry. Go on.
So tell us about your week, Joe.
Yeah, I've had a week that I've probably. Well, yeah, I've been on audit training this week for the first time. So it was. Just trying to think how best to summarize it. Tired is a good one, Phil. It's very intense, but very good.
Great fun. What you should be describing it as. It was very intense, wasn't it? So we went down to London, didn't we? We went at 4:30 or 4:20. Start, yeah. And then get the early train down across London for a 9 o'clock start. And then it was 2 days of intense interviews. But before that, we'd spent a day each, maybe a bit more, reviewing documentation, poring over this organization's website, filling in forms, downloading things, buying things out of their shop, putting things in the basket, then abandoning it just to see what happened, really. You've got to go into these audits with quite a critical eye, haven't you? But it was good, wasn't it? It's very intense, though.
Yes, very intense, and it's nice to kind of see your approach, and just to kind of hopefully tailor my approach when I'm starting to do some audits myself. So we've got another one, haven't we? In I think it's about six working days.
Next Monday.
And then another one a couple of weeks after. So it's going
to
be very intense.
And in the meantime, I'm going to Ireland to do another one.
Yes, and I had audit training yesterday when I came back off the back of my 2 days of actually doing the audit. I had a day in the office of.
Was that good? The training, was that good? Useful to
me? Was good. Yeah. It was good. I think it was quite hard to kind of condense everything down into a day. That was again really quite full on. But we kind of looked at the theory side of things, looking at, the ISO's kind of background of what auditing actually is, and looking at audit scope, criteria and objectives and that side of things. So it was really actually quite. It was really good, and hopefully I'll be able to use some of that as well as what I've learned from you to kind of, tailor my own approach when I go on to do the auditing on myself.
Yeah. David, I think you've said before, David, you're in the final stages of this degree. I mean, it sounds a fascinating degree, actually. So I don't know if it's, it's probably quite a challenging subject to copy out to focus on, actually. But good luck with that. Is it a dissertation, the final stage, maybe? What have you been up to then, Jasmine?
Same old on my side, just touching base with customers, trying to drive somewhere through support and our consultant contracts. It's been a good week, to be honest. I think last week I spent a lot of time, trying to set foundations in place to reach out to old customers and whatnot. But, things are slowly coming back to me now. So it's quite positive. But then this morning I've been... just doing some podcast prep, half stressing because AI is a very complex area.
You should have asked AI to do your podcast prep.
Oh, well, it's funny you say that, actually, because I kind of did.
Oh, did you?
So we were talking earlier in the we'll probably go into it in
we'll
a bit more
this
detail
in a,
later.
Let me just tell you about my week. I mean, because I'm feeling left out here. So I did do some great couple of days work with Joe. I said to him, you develop your own style. I've been doing auditing since the 90s, where I trained in ISO 29001 and this model called EFQM, the European Foundation for Quality Management. And I've done lots of things. But I said to Joe, I'm not particularly good at it because I'm a bit too soft. So when Esther used to do them, she'd be like, with a question, which she wouldn't, she'd like a dog with a bone. But I know I do bad things. I lead people into questions. I don't necessarily ask those questions. And for David, he'll be saying, oh my goodness, this is classic, bad things to do. So I have got bad habits. That's why I wanted you to do training with somebody else, Joe. So you see my style, my approach, which I get to the end result, but I know I've got bad habits that I ought really to shake. And yesterday I spent the whole day pretty much doing, every year we've got to fill in a big questionnaire for the PCI, the Security Council. And we have to show we've reviewed our key policies and send them a copy of our key policies. And we've got to send them examples of our audit work and, which they are quality assessing. So it took a whole day to go through every one of our sort of governance processes, check it, sign it off, put the judge control in it, and then submit it and then anonymize some audit reports and prepare those and send those off. So that was like all day yesterday. And then today, I was planning on doing some podcast prep, but then I've been on the phone all morning. So I've done none.
Oh. No, you've
done a little
done
bit,
some.
To be fair. Yeah, say, yeah. You say none. You considerable amount.
Phil and has then a great habit of sending us his, you know, extensive podcast notes about 20 minutes before the session.
Yeah, so. Like, here you are, Joe and Jasmine. Go read these.
And then I'm doing some training this afternoon, 4 till 5. So I'm quite looking forward to that.
A busy week. What's the training on, out of curiosity?
Well, it's actually on the, it's a part of a series I'm doing for the next few weeks on the Jamaican Data Protection Act for, It's really just kind of training some DPOs over there. And this is just the first session. So this is really just navigating the act and the two regulations that kind of go with it. And it's and definitions, you know, it's good fun.
Nice. Before we go into the main part of the session, there are a couple of news pieces I thought that would be worth raising. I don't know if everyone in the chat has heard of them yet, but the Data Use and Access Bill has been introduced into the House of Lords. This was on Wednesday. So, It contains 8 sections, including access to customer data and business data, digital verification systems, national underground asset register, register of births and deaths, data protection and privacy, the Information Commission, other provisions about the use of or access to data, and final provisions. So quite more data focused than I think was initially suggested. You know, there's a whole section there on personal data, so, or data protection at least specifically. So I'd be quite intrigued to see what that has and, you know, what similarities it has from the old bill as well. Mm. But yeah, they claim that it will strengthen the UK. The government claims it will strengthen the UK economy, contributing $10 billion over the next decade through data sharing practices in areas such as open banking and smart data schemes.
They love to pull these big numbers out, don't they, and just stick them in the reports to go, oh, wow, 10 billion savings. Yes,
feels
please.
It, yeah.
No, generating, that's generating, not savings. That's generating, well, the economy, 10 billion.
Same thing. Oh, yes, let's go on. We'll have 10 billion generated. Why not? But where they pull that number from?
James has got to love those figures out of thin air, literally.
They must have some scientific, basis. Yeah. Flipped the coin so many times, it landed on head so many times, that became the number. That was the scientific basis.
On the other side, the House of Lords committee letter has been produced and it outlines a cost of losing EU adequacy for the UK.
Oh,
so
right.
There was an article on it. I've not had much chance to get my head around it, but essentially the report aims at the financial cost of losing adequacy status would cost UK businesses $1 to $1.6 billion in compliance costs. So nothing on the 10 million or 10 billion even.
No, but if you weigh up 10
God,
billion,
that's the thing. That's a danger, you know, isn't it? That's the danger.
That's just
that can't be. It's irreconcilable. I think it's very, very dangerous to lose adequacy, I think.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I hope they don't have a similar, you know, approach to the previous government in which, you know, the watering or removing red tape, you know, watering down people's rights and so on. I hope that they have listened to professionals in the space and will take that into account. But already, I don't know if I mentioned it on a previous podcast, there I think they changed the previous proposal to give access to the Department for Work and Pensions to people's bank accounts. I don't know if it was ever supposed to be direct access. I don't know if anyone can help me on that. But, you know, they've gone back on that if that's the case. And it would only be that they can request that information from banks in certain circumstances. So,
I'm not sure, actually. But just before we move on, you mentioned there about kind of like that these new bills is meant to cut out cumbersome red tape. But, you know, the threat of losing adequacy. And if we did lose adequacy with the EU, that's just, we've lost some red tape in some instances of the law of what we need to do. But then we've just opened up a whole new avenue of having to make sure that we've got additional safeguards in place with you know, EU organizations. And it's just like, you're not really, you know, benefiting, are you really, in the long run, if the threat of what we're actually doing is going to lose adequacy, because you're going to have to go through all of your old contracts with all EU suppliers and make sure that you've then implemented, you know, your SECs if required. So it's just like, I just don't, I just these sort of things, these bills of, you know, people are creating, going, oh yeah, look at this, we'll cut out all this stuff, but I don't think really they're understanding, you know, the negatives of potentially, you know, implementing the bills that they've been chucking around for the last 18 months or so.
I think there's probably, I could probably find this information somewhere, but it'd be good to know where, you know, they draw these figures from, you know, the savings based on what, because it, fair enough if you're saving money, but you're not saving time, like you say, you know, so is it actually favorable in the long run? No, probably not, because you're losing money through spending time on, you know, in other areas. So
yeah,
and in complex areas as well, it's not easy.
I've not actually read the new bill, but there's Suzanne in the comments has said that it has scrapped some of the things the old DPDI bill was, you know, looking to introduce. So the ROPA requirement is being kept, and Peter had said that the DPO is also safe. So, you know, those are two really good positives, aren't they? Because those two things were probably my biggest concerns with the new DPDI bill.
We'll have to do a session on it fairly soon, actually. But I mean, I don't know if we're ready. Are we ready to segue into? Because I mean, the DPO might be safe from in the bill, but are they safe from AI? Is one of the key questions.
Ooh.
Of the session, isn't it?
What, you know, even is
are
AI,
we going
to
be are we going to get replaced?
Probably.
Well, it's a good question. I can't remember. I cannot remember when we last did AI, but it was.
Is that meant to be your AI voice?
Time ago.
Oh,
sound
God.
Like a Dalek.
No, I think when I looked at the podcast notes for the last time we did AI, I think it might have even nearly been a year ago. I don't think we've ever spoken about it since. And we talked then about all sorts of things. But what I kind of, there's been a few developments, I think, since we last looked at it. But I was interested in looking at the definition of AI in the EU AI Act. And then I read some stuff about the definition of AI in the EU AI Act. And there's lots of holes in it. So there's a very good article I read, which I'll put a link to it in here. And it was kind of pulling apart the definition. The definition is a machine-based system designed to operate with the varying levels of autonomy that may exhibit adaptiveness after deployment, and that for explicit or implicit objectives infers from the input it receives how to generate output, such as a prediction, content recommendation, or decisions that can influence physical or virtual environments. Now, there's a lot in that definition, which I'm not going to bother repeating, because it's in the Article 3 of the AI Act. But, because it's quite chunky, there's lots of bits you can, you know, this article is saying, there's lots of bits that you could actually pull out and say, well, actually, it doesn't do that. Therefore, it's not caught by the AI Act. But in an interesting definition nonetheless. I don't know if you've looked at the AI Act. I can't say that very well.
Yeah, Jasmine actually sent me some revision this morning to go have a look at the EU AI Act. she wanted me to go have a look at what is considered to be high risk. So I don't know if you want to explore that maybe.
Yeah, just on what you were saying, Phil, I'd be really intrigued to see what case law comes from this, because I'm assuming that there will be a lot. And, you know, just what, I don't know what approach will be taken with regard to this piece of legislation moving forward, because even at the moment, you know, things are, in my opinion anyway, there probably will be some people on this call who know a lot more than me around AI specifically, but I don't know, like, how I feel like I've lost my train of thought. So with AI, with the definition and, you know, how things are defined within the EU AI Act, will, okay, let me start again. So Phil, you're saying that, you know, you might be able to draw from the definition things that don't meet the definition, you know, circumstances,
yes,
where machine learning or whatever it is.
Well, if it's not designed to operate in this particular way. So I'm going to put another article in here, which is where the kind of critique of I've put in a link to the AI Act. It's actually kind of set to Article 3, but if you click on it, you'll be able to go all over the place. But
where do you go if something's not considered AI, but, you know, by definition, but there is, you know, enough argument to say that it's not anything else, then where do you go from there?
You end up in the courts, don't you? And then the same, you know, the courts will make a judgment, and the judgment will then become kind of the established interpretation of the law.
So would you say that there might be instances where this definition might not, it, you know, there might there might be circumstances where you don't need to meet all elements of the definition for it to still be sufficient. That's what I was trying to get.
That was very eloquently put. And the answer is, I don't know.
Eventually.
which isn't particularly eloquently put. So I should imagine probably, I mean, I don't know. We're all guessing, aren't we? So this is EU AI Act, you know, first thing, and, you know, what's its applicability? Are we going to take any notice of it in the UK? But, you know, then surely will come to pass that some systems will be deemed to be AI and they will try and disprove that they are AI, because then, you know, but then it introduces a number of principles, you know, so, you know, you will be in breach of the principles. But again, the article I've put a link to is really quite good at drawing, you know, what AI Act does and what GDPR does and how they actually work in tandem or should work in tandem.
Do you have anything to build on that, Jasmine?
Just in terms of the whether we will, you know, follow suit with the EU AI Act, you know, in this country, I think I've seen a couple of examples where I don't think that will be the case. Joe, you found before that, you know, a prohibited AI system is one of facial recognition for use for law enforcement, except in specific situations. And I don't know what they are exactly, but I don't think that will be the case in this country. You know, it's being rolled out more and more.
It's already happening, isn't it? The police have already started to use facial recognition, haven't they?
We've talked about it loads of times.
So I can't see that being, you know, part of the legislation to say, oh no, this is banned from now, because, you know, they're seeing it in a positive light and they're trying to roll it out increasingly.
I mean, what Lawrence and Nicola are kind of talking about, you mentioned the other day when we were on the audit, Joe, that you know, there's this Google system note taker that you can, is it, load stuff into, and it will create a short podcast for you on it.
To be fair, that came from Jasmine. So Jasmine passed it to me and then I passed it to you on the audit. But yeah, that was literally about to say, I didn't want to spin the conversation on the head. I feel like this podcast is going to be really quite erratic because there's so much to cover and like the chat is going absolutely bonkers. But I was going to make the point, actually, thanks Phil for noticing that Lawrence has quite rightly identified Google's LM notebook. He's suggesting that you can create a podcast between two people that sounds lifelike. And actually this morning, Jasmine, you did it, didn't you? You went and created a podcast it was mind-bogglingly just and it's just really weird. They had like, they were even making like noises and like
interrupting each other like we would.
So it's just like I don't know, do you want to explain kind of a little bit more around
it? Well, clever. Yeah, I mean, so presumably it's been trained on podcasts. It must have been listening to podcasts to determine what hours.
So basically it's just a, you know, chat function like ChatGPT or Gemini. You know, you can ask it questions and it'll provide you with an answer, but you can attach files to it. So I attached the EU AI Act, you know, it's just a hefty file, and I asked it to create an audio file, and basically that is what the podcast is. And it's a conversation between two people, 15 minutes, and they explain what the, you know, what the information that you provided, the attachment that you provided is about, in, you know, a really digestible way. And it's really realistic, obviously, like Nicholas said, you know, it's very American, but it is, you know, it's human. For AI, it's human as well in terms of how they talk to each other, and it's so easy to take in and to understand. It's actually really good. Like, it's really good. I quite liked it. And even with that, you know, you attach the file, but the only thing is you can't convert the audio to, you know, to a summary. So I asked it to summarize what was spoken about in the podcast. You can't do that, but obviously it comes from the same source, you know, that file, the EU AI Act that I attached. So I asked for a summary of that, and, you know, it was even pretty good for that. I think what I like about it is the fact that obviously it's, you know, being trained in a certain way, but it's using information that you're giving it to summarize rather than just scraping the internet for all different sources. And, you know, you're not being able to trust it as much. And I'm not saying that it's completely accurate, because I don't know, because I've not read the Act, you know, through and through, but it is really useful. So
do you not think the dangers with that, and also the dangers of AI in general, is that, you know, people are putting these things into, so say for example, if you've uploaded something into that for it to create a podcast, Are you then able to though go and share that podcast, you know, on platforms like this or on your website? But who's to say that the information that you put in there for them to generate a podcast about is even accurate? So I think that's the biggest kind of, obviously, one of the main risks.
A lot of risks we'll come on to. In terms of using in the workplace, at this point, I think we should all be having, you know, policies on the use of AI in the workplace. I mean, I use it for a really simple thing. So when in the how we used to work when we're working on a Roper project is we would pretty much start with a blank sheet of paper. You know, we'd say to each team or department, you know, what systems do you use and what do you use them for, and also what processing do you do, so we can try and get a feel for, you know, the processing activities. But actually, I found it's a lot easier to ask ChatGPT to give me a list of all the typical processing activities that an IT department does, an HR department does, a company secretarial department does, a hotel reservation department does. And it does a really good job at coming up with a list of things. You then can give that to the department, say, you modify this and take out things. And it's much quicker. Now, the danger is you get them, they just look at it and say, yeah, that's about right, and send it back without really thinking it through. But again, you know, I think what it's good at is this kind of creative and summative type of, you know, activities. But the dangers we're going to hopefully get on to in a minute.
Or now?
Yes, indeed. Now, yeah, I'm just reading the chat, so I'm quiet.
There's a couple of questions around IP law and, you know, who owns the content, really. But David said there's quite a bit of case law to say AI cannot be registered as a creator for IP.
That's correct. Yeah, there was case law recently on that. Yeah. So then AI, yeah, the copyright, isn't it? Yeah, remember reading that.
Are either of you familiar with Copilot? Do you know much about it?
About an hour ago.
No, I haven't. Familiar with it.
I was hoping to have a conversation around that. But I only really know what it does. It's basically a large language model that you can use as ChatGPT and so on, but provided by Microsoft. But you can also integrate it with Microsoft applications, so Excel, Word, Outlook, and there's a little icon you can use. And say, for example, on Excel, you've got a massive spreadsheet. You can ask, you know, the Copilot to summarize financial figures for this or whatever it is. You know, it's really interesting, actually. It sounds like it would be very productive. You know, it would increase productivity massively. You can even get it to summarize a spreadsheet, for example, in an email, as you know, to then send on to board or whoever.
One of the potential issues is, you know, where is the development of this lot taking place? And I would suggest that most of it is probably taking place in the US. So, you know, let's say that these companies are building these fantastic tools for the use, you know, primarily in the US, which obviously is a global market, isn't it? The fact that we've got rules and regulations that might adjust how we can use them or whether we can use them or not isn't necessarily their concern, is it? It's up to us to make sure we comply with the laws of our own jurisdictions. So,
yeah.
I mean, I read some quite interesting stuff about AI in the States, and because the mismatch of different data laws in the States, then there's a whole array of confusion over which states you can use AI tools in and which states you can't. And there's some I looked at like 8 landmark cases in different states with different rulings. So, you know, this, the tech's coming from over the pond, isn't it? And then we're all saying, yeah, this is great, you know.
But the thing is, so like a couple of people said in the chat, it's already part of your environment because it's within Office 365.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
So Nicholas said, for example, Copilot keeps input within your Microsoft environment and doesn't share outward. It's the only AI tool we permit unless in a sandbox test environment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does look really good, to be honest.
I think Elaine's point is brilliant, isn't it? So what about if you're a public authority and somebody asks a question under the Freedom of Information Act, you know, what are your employees asking? AI tools, what are they using them for? I mean, how do you kind of find that information out for a start? And secondly, I wonder what interesting things you'd get back.
And I do
good one to ponder, isn't it?
Yeah, I do wonder how how accurate it is as well. You know, obviously, if it's based on information that's there, there's still the chance that it could be inaccurate, and that can have its own risks as well, especially, you know, when it comes to, say, in the healthcare sector, for example. You know, I don't know if you're even inputting patient data, but it can have adverse effects on patients if, you know, you're using it to make decisions. You know, there's a few examples around that.
Yeah, do you not remember the news story we spoke about on here about a month or two ago about how GPs in England are starting to use AI, and it's to give diagnoses and stuff, and to identify, you know, remedies for certain kind of like medical conditions. So it's already happening, and that's kind of, I think that's what's the scariest thing, you know, as Phil said, that police are, you know, using AI over here, you know, for the prevention and detection of crime, and there's no kind of law, is there? Or this, I mean, the new, is this, you know, the new bill that we spoke about earlier on, is that the one that they said when Labour came into play that they're going to be looking at a bill on AI? I've not actually read it. I probably should.
I don't
do,
think
to be
they,
fair, but
they said that they would, to be honest. I think it was left intentionally quiet on that field, so I don't really know what their intentions are around an AI bill. Phil, you look like you've got something to say. I don't know if I'm being
no, it's just what Sharon said. Again, it's fantastic stuff. And to cope, you know, you've done like a quarter's work, or however frequent your performance review system is, you know, it might be a year's worth of work, and Copilot has remembered it and synthesize it into this fantastic, you know, self-assessment. Oh, look what a great job I've done. And then that gets something. I mean, it's brilliant. It's really good stuff, isn't it? I mean, it's helpful. It remembers what, you know, the highlights and potentially the lowlights of what you've done during the course of the year. It's useful stuff, isn't it?
I think, yeah, so I was going to say, I think AI, you know, can be useful. And even like, I've not seen Copilot, but I imagine, can it like help you to create PowerPoints, you know, make them just look so much better than if you were to do it yourself? And like Excel can be an absolute nightmare, can't it, in terms of like...
Yeah, if you don't know your way around it, it's really really hard. But for what's been said in the chat, you know, it works with all the Office 365 you know, programs. So Visio, I guess, and, you know, maybe even Project. But that sounds quite... quite useful tools, you know, build me a project on this particular topic. Well, that's going to definitely shortcut things, isn't it?
Agree. And I think that's where the, you know, the benefits of it are. But, and, you know, it can even like, but when people are doing research on things and trying to find out questions, it can point you in the right direction. But I think when you are asking it for things, asking it, you know, to find things out for you, I think you've always got to be a little bit skeptical of the things that it gives back. Because one, unless it tells you, you don't really know the source of where it's come from. And I think, especially in our roles as DPOs, a lot of it comes down to context in terms of what we're trying to find out. You know, I've had so many queries come my way recently that's made me stumped. And it's kind of like, it could be this, but it could also be this, in terms of like relationships, for example. I've been trying to determine some of my customers' relationships of whether they're a controller or a processor. And some instances have been both. And I think if you're to use AI to try and find that out, I think it's just a little bit of a dangerous precedent, and I don't think you could always rely fully on AI to kind of guide you, especially in our roles.
No, you can't. The use cases we're talking about here, like, I mean, I think this is a really good idea, using Copilot or something to write a policies and procedures. They're still need checking, you know, is this going to lead to compliant behavior, compliant with either our own rules, a standard, or the law, you know, and, you know, is it the way we do things around here, if it's a procedure? So it might rattle off a generic thing. It then needs tweaking, but it'll save a lot of the legwork. But I would have thought, I'm going to try this. I'm going to see if I can get AI to write an AI policy. I reckon it would do a really good job. I'm not going to do it now. I have to do it after this. I'm not going to suddenly cut my head down and start asking it to do stuff. But I reckon it'd do a really good job. But the big thing is, you know, what's the risks in our organisations? You know, maybe doing some of this stuff, is there's a risk that we get duff policies and procedures. I think what we focused on before is, one, using personal data to train AI. And two, you know, putting personal data into AI. You know, let's say we were using AI to do a subject access request, for instance, which we've looked at systems that do that. You load up a load of documentation, you tell it what you're looking for, and it goes off and highlights it and potentially redacts it. Where's that personal data going? Who's got access to it? You know, is that what we said in our privacy notices? Is it on our records processing activities? And the whole move from, you know, kind of data warehouses to data lakes, you know, where you've just got this amorphous pot of unstructured data, because AI deals with that better than, you know, structured data in databases. Yeah, but you can't, you know, the GDPR is at odds with access, and you can't just accumulate data on the off chance it might be useful in the future. You know, you've got to have a purpose for it. And is we're using it for AI a strong enough purpose? You know, how do your legitimate interests, if that's your lawful basis of processing, align with the rights and freedoms of people? What about special category data? You know, what's the lawful grounds for processing that? So, the, you know, there's a lot of stuff to think about from a privacy point of view. And what we've talked, but what we've been talking about, you know, in the chat, you know, a fairly, you know, I think useful, you know, doing the heavy lifting, but you just got to be aware of the results. It becomes a problem when you start putting personal data in, or sufficient information that somebody becomes identifiable from it.
There's two sides, isn't there? There's the, in relation to people and the effect it can have on people. There's the use of personal data, whether it's for, you know, a response, or whether it's for training.
We've got David's going to dive in.
Every day, apart from...
But then there's all... I'll just finish this and then...
Can I take your phone?
Oh, someone else was talking then. That wasn't me.
But then there's the other side in terms of the effect on people, you know, in, for example, producing documents like policies and procedures that are incorrect and will have adverse effects, you know, down the line. There's two ways to look at it. And obviously, I think it's easier to control or maybe not control, but maybe to identify the risks in, you know, inputting personal data, because you can go through the GDPR, but then there's obviously that secondary risk to people there as well. But David, do you want to unmute?
Yeah, no, I'm unmuted. I was just going to say, I like some of the discussion. I think, to be fair, guys, I think some of it's a little almost AI scaremongering, and I'm not sure I fully align with you. I think there's, you know, if you spend a lot of time with the subject, I don't think it's quite as scary as you're making out. I think there's a lot of sensible things being said, and it's always about checking what you come. What I would say is, I think, you know, a lot of the things that Phil and Joe have just been talking about, it's a new system. A good PIA would pull out most of it. The legislation change in Europe isn't really, it basically says use a PIA as a starting point anyway. You know, it talks about that as a good starting point for an assessment of your AI system. I think the bits that, you know, are probably new to us, adrift and bias and ongoing monitoring, but things like where your data is going, who's it going to be shared with, where's it stored, who else is getting access to them? That's all PIA stuff. Wouldn't you pick that up in your PIA? Yes, you've got to ask the right questions of the person that's doing the model. And if you don't get the answers, it's a bit like cloud computing. If you don't get the answers and they won't tell you what they're doing and where they're going, don't use them. Yeah, it's pretty much as simple as that. And the big players will tell you what they're doing with it, how they're sharing it, what's happening with it. I know it tends not to just go off into a big cloud. Most of it are pre-trained LLMs, so pre-trained language models, that you then further train on your data, but your data stays in your model, on your environment, and you're the only person to access it, or you're the only organization. At the end of that, it goes away. You know, that's the ideal. That's what most of us are looking for when we work with the types of technologies that you're talking about. And we've looked at things like, you know, a lot of these. Copilot was a really interesting one for us, because the big challenge with Copilot, especially in a massive organization, is they very cleverly put it won't expose data that already isn't exposed. However, what it will do is make it more accessible to people. And that is a challenge. You know, you need there. If you're a large organization, they'll talk about making sure you've got things like Purview and other Microsoft products already rolled out, which are their categorization and already mapped models and stuff like that. So there are a lot, if you're a bigger organization, and even if you're a smaller organization, there are a lot of things you need to be careful of, at least in my opinion, with Copilot. That's not to say it doesn't have lots of those benefits that you were talking about. It really is quite impressive, some of these technologies, when you use them.
Yeah, I think you made very good points there.
Yeah, they're in their infancy.
Are they really, though? I mean, that's the other thing. We've been using, you know, at the moment, AI legislation picks up all forms of AI. You've been using machine learning, AI machine learning, in your AV products for the last 10 years. Definitely, as you would see it in AI, for the last 5 years. You've been using others, you know. So much of this, and I find this quite frustrating, and people can disagree or agree, is vendors going, we're using AI. No, they're not. They're using what we would have called machine learning for the last 10 years. And it's been there and it's no different. There is definitely LLMs out there that are a bit of a step change. Mm. And yes, that's new. But even they're not that new. You know, they're a few years in. Yeah, I get that. But I'm not sure whether, you know, if I'm doing a PIA at the moment and it says, is this new technology? Not really. It's pretty tested. You know, would you click, is it new technology? I'm not sure I would personally. It's one of the things we do as a risk factor on ours. Not everybody will do that, but we look and assess whether it's new technology. Is it really new technology? I'm not sure it is. So, you know, it's interesting good points.
Yeah, good points.
I think there's also those situations where other people, you know, within the organisation that just use it off their own bat. So, you can do a DPIA for AI and, you know, for organisation approved systems, but then you've also got to raise that awareness of the risks around using 100%. ChatGPT, for example.
100% governance, you know, process. Block URLs for sites you don't want to use. We do all those kind of things. Lots of comms over where you shouldn't be using that technology, for sure. Yeah, because you're not going to have assessed everything. But that's only the same as Dropbox. Everything else that comes out there that seems like really good until you try to adopt it in a corporate market and read the terms and conditions and find you giving them access to your information, everything else. It's the same as everything else. It's just a different set of technology that you've got to control at an environmental level. For me, anyway.
Excellent points. Like we looked at, I know Lawrence got his hand up, we looked at Einstein, which is a plugin to Salesforce, part of Salesforce. Really, we haven't adopted it, but we were concerned about maintaining our IP in our own Salesforce environment, using our Einstein AI to look over that to help us answer cases more quickly. And again, that feels like it's a little bit more controlled because it's, you know, your IP, which never leaves your system. But anyway, we didn't do it. Lawrence, sorry, we hands up.
It's all right. I was just going to say, yeah, the issue of new technology, I don't know if that's necessarily an accurate issue. It's more of a straw man, because at any given time, we have basic technology that's swirling around to create the more advanced technology. If we're really saying new technology, that's never going to be distributed. New technology is sitting in labs somewhere in Silicon Valley or in Shanghai being developed. So it's a misnomer to say it's new technology simply because it's built off of existing basic or intermediate technologies that we have. I think what's new is the interconnectedness and the rapid deployment and rapid utilization of it, which is transformative and is extremely risky. So that, you know, you say, oh, I'll have this locked down. And, you know, it's that basic issue of the guy or gal who leaves a door open or a port open and whammo, you've got a breach, even though you have elite firewalls, elite CrowdStrike and whatnot. So I think we are in a very risky time, and we're waiting for some of the major breaches for us to reveal the extent of our vulnerability. You know, somebody is going to develop AI that will raid your inner platforms to extract your data. So yeah, we are at a time of excitement, but we're also, it's like exploration, like wildcatting. We're exploring the oil fields and a lot of oil is shooting up out of the ground and people are making a ton of money. We're just waiting for that first oil well to blow up, start burning. And then people go, oh yeah, we need health and safety. Oh yeah, we need to start applying this. So I think that's something to be aware of. I don't think we should scaremonger, because it is an extension of what we're doing. But at the same time, it's also going to reveal a number of organizations aren't doing what they need to do at the fundamental level about basic data quality, basic data security, and basic training for their staff to keep the place safe. So it's just something to be aware of.
Good points. Thank you. Yeah, good points. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the, you know, you're right, your data quality, and if you're not on your data retention, again, where we've been looking, Joe, you know, data retention going back a long, 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 long time. You know, so, you know, with basic housekeeping things not under control, then there's a better chance that the AI will pick up old, out of date or incorrect information if you've not got the retention managed. I'm interested, if we've got time to talk about the kind of the concept of data in the public domain, you know, what we think about that, and maybe if there's any other points you want to make before we move into that topic. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, so personal data is personal data at the end of the day, if you're relating to personal data, that is. And if AI is scraping the internet to learn, some of that is going to be inaccurate. You know, some of it will be opinions, and that can be put towards that you know, its ultimate decisions. And we've seen that through output of large language models from time to time. But I don't know. I suppose these are the kinds of risks that it can be difficult. I mean, I don't know enough about AI, you know, the different types of AI within an organization to visualize necessarily at this moment in time, to visualize how it works. So, you know, machine learning, does that base on, you know, is that based on a closed environment, or does it depend on what kind of system that you're using? Do you know, Phil?
Well, I think it's either. And again, I think people have come and said either. You can have AI looking at a closed environment and, you know, a database of information, or you could have it looking as ChatGP does at what's in the internet, you know, which is generally freely available.
So I suppose that's something that you've got to consider then when you're, you know, considering a new system or an AI system within your organization, in terms of, you know, the risks associated with that and the accuracy of the output.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in this kind of notion of data in the public domain, because, again, I read some stuff about it in prep for this, you know, people saying, well, you know, people put their photos in the public domain, you know, and why did they do that? Well, you know, to collaborate with their friends, to, you know, update their friends and family. You know, is it a big problem that Clearview have gone and scraped that and put it into a database of billions of images in order to train a model to help law enforcement? You know, why is it a problem? You know, you're sure the expectation when you put information out in the public domain is that it's in the public domain, and you've lost control of how it's going to get used. Lawrence has got his hand up again.
I was just going to say, following up on the chat, is that, you know, what you move into is people seeding the internet with false data of their own
to cloud
or cover their tracks.
Yeah.
But also, I think there is the issue of the public domain. What is the public domain is a serious question that is uncertain, almost sort of like a philosophical question, like what does it mean to be human? Because is Twitter public domain? You're on a private platform and you have issues there. And a lot of those are still going to need to be tested out. You know, the right to be forgotten, how quickly, you know. So, yeah, it's exciting stuff. And again, it's going to require stuff to be addressed that has been implicit for too long about ownership of data. Who owns your data? Do you own your own data? Does the organization have a responsibility regarding you as an individual, simply as a rights-bearing entity? Or do you actually own your data where you can enforce this in the way that you own your own labor or you own, quote unquote, property? These are fascinating questions.
Yeah, they are. And you know, you can't own your own data. You know, people own copy, you own the information about you. You have your name is your name, and you can change that. But anybody's got a copy of that information owns their own copy. You know, if you're right, at a philosophical level, I think it's really, you know, quite interesting to think it through and to work with it. You know, but it is not. When we're there as privileged practitioners, you know, we haven't got a particularly easy job in stepping through this to try and guide our organizations. You know, we want our organizations to be efficient, effective, you know, and commercially viable. We don't want to be blocking the adoption of new technology. We don't want to be seen as the people putting up the obstacles, but everyone wants to move at such a fast pace. I think that, you on the back foot, you know, we're trying to do that investigation of the, kind of the black box, you know, the model explainability. You know, how can you get to the bottom of that? We've looked at countless, you know, DPIAs on dead simple things, simple processes, and people haven't got a grasp of them. So as a previous practitioner, I think it's quite hard. What we need is we need AI to help us do our previous practitioner bit.
Yeah, Phil, I just want to build on what you said about kind of, you know, when you put your images online, you know, it's in the public domain, and therefore you can't really be surprised, you know, what that information is then used for, because it's out in the public domain and you have no control of it, which is, you know, a good and fair point. But I think where the kind of issue lies is that as a person in today's society, with, you know, how much we use online services, we're not really given a choice but to put things out in the public domain. So then, like, you know, for example, social media platforms are so prominent in, you know, everyday life, and even in business as well, right? So our images are all over LinkedIn, you know, for the purpose of promoting this podcast, for example. And then for Clearview AI to then go and take my photo in order to provide it to, you know, law enforcement, for example, I just doesn't sit right with me. It's just not really. And I know that it's like out in the public domain, but it's, we're not really given a choice, are we? We have to kind of put ourselves out there in this, you know, in society, in this day and age. And then it's unfair for that image to then get used for something that, I don't think it's proportionate for me to put it online in the first place.
Yeah. A lot of interesting points. We could spend a session talking about that. I started reading a book by a social psychologist called Jonathan Haidt this week, and it's called The Anxious Generation, and it's kind of looking at the, you know, why Gen Z is apparently, you know, a very anxious generation compared to previous generations. And it does address the question of, you know, that need to, you know, be socially connected via technology, and whether it's realistic to say, well, don't use it then, you know. There's too many points to raise about, you know, than the time we've got left here, but, you know, all really interesting, interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. But have you got a choice? You know, you can't really cut yourself off from using this technology. You can have private groups, but what does that mean in practice? You know, the data is still on some big platform.
I feel like, you know, as you say, Gen Z grows up and you know, it becomes just the normal world to have technology all around you, you know, social media all around you. I think that's just accepted that you know your data is not.
Well, what this guy's saying, ways. Yeah, this guy's saying that, you know, the technology is not the problem, because technology has been around forever. You know, even when I was a boy and fire was invented, you know, we considered leading edge technology at the time. But it's a kind of asynchronous communications. You know, you broadcast out and then, you know, you don't have a conversation so much. You know, you send messages out, you send texts out, and you don't get an instant response back. And there's like disembodied conversations like this. You know, we're not in person. We can't see body language. We can't read. And, you know, changing, you know, from physical play to, you know, digital platform play. Apparently all mammals need to have this kind of physical interaction. So they learn how to deal with success and failure. They develop empathy. And that's what this guy is saying. I'm only on page 11, so not read the whole book. But I think it's going to be a fascinating read, just thinking about, you know, what have been the changes since, he says, 1980s to date, which has affected, you know, the ability of Gen Z to. I think all this working from home, I think it's going to be catastrophic in conjunction with some of that other stuff. You know, people who are working from home constantly without any social interaction, without any guidance or mentorship, without any kind of. I'm going on a soapbox here, aren't I? I'll shut up. Anyway, I think it's a potential problem.
No, it's really interesting. I think it's something that we've all probably thought of, you know, to some level, and I think only time will tell in, you know, how bad that trajectory goes, or good, you know, that there are some positives to it as well. Yeah. But as you say, from that social side, it is worrying, and you see it in older generations, you know, talk like my parents, for example, will say that I spend too much time on my phone and whatnot. And it's just becoming the norm. But I always think about when, you know, children and babies now being born into this world where it's the norm, where do you go from there? You know, what they're learning the world in a completely different way, in a completely like, you know, online, interacting online, and what will that turn them into, really?
I'm fascinated to know what
AI robots
I'm fascinated to know what Copilot, Elaine said she's put the linked articles from this chat feed into Copilot, and I'm just interested, you know, what it would come back with. But
yeah, I'd like to know as well. And while that happens, I don't know if anybody has had any dealings with ISO 42001.
I was going to say, you've had a look at that, haven't you?
Yeah. It's an ISO standard that is looking at AI management systems. So it addresses automated decision making, data analysis, insight and machine learning, and ongoing learning as well. So it's intended to be integrated with other organizational processes, and, you know, an organization's overall management structure. But it covers specific issues related to AI, considering the design of processes, information systems and controls. So yeah, if anyone's had a look at that, I'd be intrigued to know, you know, what your thoughts are on it. I think it's obviously good, without having, you know, us having done it, at least it gives some sort of framework for managing AI and, you know, the types of things that you need to be considering to ensure fairness, transparency, just an ethical use of it as well. And then obviously the security aspects.
Yeah. I was going to put in another link. Quite an interesting report I read today. But also I noticed that Camden Council have got a data charter, which is all about transparency, and it does cover off their use of AI-based technologies. So I'll put that in, because if you are developing a policy, it might be useful to have a quick look around and see what other people are doing as well. So this 2042001, what is it standard for relating to AI, is it?
AI management systems, yeah. There are actually a few. There's several relating to AI, but I don't know what the other ones covered. I didn't have chance to look into them, to be honest. But and then they relate as well to other standards that aren't specifically relating to AI. But 9001, 27001, I think they work quite well in conjunction with those as well. So it's not meant to be its own standalone standard. It's meant to be really manageable in existing processes and policies and approaches really to your overarching security and management framework as an organization.
Right. Have to have a look at that.
Yeah.
Back to the question, is AI a threat to us in our roles as privacy practitioners? You know, is it, do you think the case that our colleagues will be able to go to a chat, an LLM kind of product and ask questions and get credible, right, correct, quick answers, or will they still need us?
Maybe. I mean, going back to what I said earlier in the session, that it might be able to point in the right direction, but with a lot of things that we deal with anyway, that, you know, devil's always in the detail, isn't it? It's very contextual to kind of what's going on, and there's often nuances to queries that we get given that I don't think AI would necessarily be able to interpret fully. It might be able to push you, might be able to say there might be a controller in this instance or a processor in this instance, but it might not give you a bang on kind of that you're looking for.
For instance, I was on the phone to Suzanne earlier in the day. She's got a client that had a ransomware attack a few weeks ago, and some of the data, so they're a processor in the main, that's their main business, but they also had employee data that was attacked and exfiltrated. And they have 5 employees in the Netherlands. And Suzanne's question to me was, do they need to report it to the regulator in the Netherlands? And I said, well, why would they? Effectively, it boils down to, have they got an establishment in the Netherlands? Are they caught by the EU GDPR by that fact? Because they're not caught by the other, they're not offering goods and services, etc. So, I said, you've got to read the guidance, and then it won't answer the question, but then you have to form an opinion. You know, will AI be able to answer that kind of a question? Yes, but how accurate is it? Is its answer going to be? Only as accurate as the prompt you give it, I guess. But maybe we need to just be training people to be better at asking questions.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting point, actually, because Miles,
I knew you were going to say Miles then.
Miles is an advocate for AI in DPP, but he always says that it's really down to the sort of questions and the way you word things. You really have to quite explicitly say what you want from it. I don't think he'd unmute and kind of give us any sort of examples, but I know for a fact that whenever I've used it, he's always saying, no, you've not asked it right. There's a very distinct way that you kind of have to lead it to, give you the answer that you want. So, yeah, David just said it's called a prompt engineer. Yeah, I believe that is what it's
referring to. I always tell Jasmine she's not polite enough with AI.
No, I always say please and thank you.
You have to say please and thank you just in case they become sentient. I know that if they become sentient, they're going to come after Joe first and they'll come after me last. So.
Yeah.
But yes, Phil, to answer your question, what you ask the question is really important to the answer you get back, and to kind of explore it further of what you're saying, would it kind of, replace us as a job? But another thing I want to kind of mention is, as I've kind of gone to Google some guidance from the ICO, obviously Google now has the AI kind of overview, doesn't it, where it auto generates an answer for you when you search, and it kind of tells you the source you get it from, which is great because it's from the ICO. However, what the ICO has in this guidance is not always necessarily right. I might not always necessarily agree what the ICO says. So I think no matter what you're kind of doing, you always have to kind of, you know, just take it at face value, but always maybe do some digging around it just to make sure that what it's told you is, you know, is what you believe in and your interpretation of the law.
Colin said in the chat, are we under threat? No. As long as you say please and thank you. No, I'm joking. As long as we continue to provide the policies, processes, controls and assurance that allow our businesses to exploit this technology in a fair, ethical, transparent and secure manner that adds values to the business. And I think, you know, for example, using Copilot and learning a little bit more about that and, you know, seeing that AI can be used in a controlled manner, you know, an internal controlled manner, that there's so many benefits to that, for example. And, you know, obviously David said that there are some reasons why you might not want to use it, but, you know, that's an organization's decision at the end of the day. But using that as an example, it provides a little bit more faith that you can provide the answers to some of these questions that we've been floating around for months, really. And obviously it's not perfect, but we've got the EU AI Act for now to go off. We've got standards that we can, you know, use to support our analysis of these systems and, you know, assessments of these systems. And it, at the end of the day, it can be really, really beneficial and exciting.
Yeah, I was reading some stuff. We haven't got time really to cover, but I was reading some stuff about kind of uses of AI and, you know, particularly worrisome scenarios. So one of them was online dating apps, for instance. You know, people putting a lot of information into online dating apps, you know, and whilst that's not a massive problem in its own right, you know, if it got compromised, then, you know, there's a lot of information about sexual orientation data, explicit photos, HIV status in some cases. Puts users of these services at risk of blackmail, doxing, financial loss, identity theft, emotional reputational damage, revenge porn, stalking, etc. So, you know, there is a lot, you know, a lot in to think about in, again, with in the broad context of this. You know, it's massive. And GDPR is there to regulate all processing of all data across arguably the world, if not the continent, you know, the continental EU. And, you know, AI, as we've established, is not just simple Copilot. It's massive. You know, it's pervasive. It's, you know, tools within tools. It's, yeah, you know, been around, yeah, for a long time. It's being linked together. You know, quantum computing is going to make things much faster. You know, it's an interesting time. But in all interesting times, you're going to get a Wild West scenario, aren't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, nice summed up, Phil. That was a nice
probably
close.
Run out of time, unfortunately. That
hour's gone very fast. Thank you both.
So sorry if that was a bit abstract. Session. It was a little bit abstract. It wasn't really about AI. It was kind of we covered a lot of ground, I think, probably outside of scope of what we'd intended, but never mind.
I think the chat did better than us. But yeah, thank you everyone for joining. We'll be back next week for a GDPR radio session where, to be honest, we'll probably continue this conversation a little bit more because it's always coming up. But thank you for joining us. And in the meantime, have a great weekend.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye.